ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। अहमेति स्वीकृत्य गृहेषु कुमतिर्गृहे धद्यो प्रमदयादीनो विप्रयोग उपास्थिते। किं पुरञ्जन was overly attached to his family and conceptions of I and mine. Because he was overly attracted to his wife, he was already quite poverty-stricken. At the time of separation, he became very sorry. Purport by his divine grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It is clear in this verse that at the time of death, thoughts of material enjoyment do not go away. This indicates that the living entity, the soul, is carried by the subtle body, mind, intelligence, and ego. Due to false ego, the living entity still wants to enjoy the material world, and for want of material enjoyment, he becomes sorry or sad. He still makes intellectual plans to further his existence, and therefore, although he gives up the gross body, he is carried by the subtle body to another gross body. The transmigration of the subtle body is never visible to material eyes. Therefore, when one gives up the gross body, we think that he is finished. Plans for material enjoyment are made by the subtle body, and the gross body is the instrument for enjoying these plans. Thus, the gross body can be compared to the wife. For the wife is the agent for all kinds of sense gratification. Because of long association with the gross body, the living entity becomes very sad to be separated from it. The mental activity of the living entity obliges him to accept another gross body and continue his material existence. The Sanskrit word stri means expansion. Through the wife, one expands his various objects of attraction, sons, daughters, grandsons, and so on. Attachment to family members becomes very prominent at the time of death. One often sees that just before leaving his body, a man may call for his beloved son to give him charge of his wife and other paraphernalia. He may say, "My dear boy, I am being forced to leave. Please take charge of the family affairs." He speaks in this way, not even knowing his destination. Was overly attached to his family and conceptions of I and mine. Because he was overly attracted to his wife, he was already quite poverty-stricken. At the time of separation, he became very sorry. This morning, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 28, Text Number 17. Herein there is a profoundly instructive lesson of the dangers that come upon us at the inevitable time of death. People who consider this material body as the self conceive of danger as that which could create imminent harm or suffering to this body. Actually, the soul is transcendental to the body. These are the fundamental teachings of Sri Bhagavad Gita. Nahanyate hanyamane sarire. For the soul there is no death. No water can moisten it, no fire can burn it, no wind can wither it, no weapons can harm it. Because the soul is part of Krishna. And Krishna is above the modes of material nature. Krishna tells Arjuna that you should rise above these modes of material nature and be transcendental to all of them. Be detached, transcendental to attraction and aversion, happiness, distress, honor, dishonor, pleasure, pain, success, failure, victory, defeat, heat, cold, honor, and infamy. These will inevitably come upon us. And a devotee of the Lord who sees with the eyes of wisdom understands that actually whatever comes upon us is our own doing. Karma is very powerful. Sri Nakshi Prabhu was explaining last night so nicely to the students the scientific analysis of the laws of nature, of action and reaction. So trying to escape the reality of our own responsibility, we want to blame others. We want to find excuses. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya taught, Taror Ivasihishmina. We must become tolerant. We must become forgiving. Because whatever sufferings come upon us is a reaction to our own deeds. Just like if you're eating nice prasad and you bite your tongue with your own teeth. Have any of you ever done that? It's very painful. Actually spoils the feast. You're trying to enjoy and now you're suffering because your tongue is in total pain because you bit it. Now who are you going to blame? Are you going to blame the person sitting next to you? Are you going to blame the cook? Are you going to blame the demigods? Are you going to blame your mother and father for giving you birth with these teeth? There's no one to blame. You've done it to yourself. And that is the example the acharyas give for all our sufferings. We only aggravate, implicate, and perpetuate our karmic miseries when we don't take responsibility for our sufferings, when we try to blame others. So this body is under the control of the modes of material nature, and our every word, our every action implicates us in
the inconceivable motion of these modes of material nature, actions and reactions.
Dukalayam ashashvatam.
Krishna tells us clearly, the material world is essentially a place of suffering. Threefold miseries, and ultimately death. Very difficult. So one who identifies with this gross material body as the self, danger means something that can potentially impede the longevity of my life, my health, and my power to enjoy, or the power of my loved ones to enjoy. This is danger. But for one who has higher intelligence, they understand, yes, there is danger to the body. And as long as we're living in this God-given vehicle called the body, it is our duty to maintain it so that it can efficiently perform its work. And what is the work? Tapodivyam putrakayena sattvam. The human body is specially designed and commissioned to the soul for the purpose of self-realization. Nayam deho deha bhajanda loke kastam kanva arhati vibhajam jaya. Human beings are not really meant for sense gratification. Material enjoyment, both subtle and gross, are factually available to all the lower species of animals, insects, reptiles, fish. Human life is meant for self-realization. It should be used for its purpose. To take something of great value that's very, very difficult to achieve and use it for something for the purpose which any cheap, ordinary facility can accomplish is a great loss. It's a terrible loss. So yes, we must protect the body. But real danger, the greatest danger, is to forget the purpose of human life and to waste our moments. Therefore, forgetfulness of Krishna is actually the most dangerous situation in all of creation. This is described in Vishnu Purana, that there is no greater inauspiciousness, there is no greater tragedy than to waste a moment in forgetfulness of Krishna and our relationship with Krishna. And at the time of death, people are trying to make so many arrangements to somehow or other prolong their body for a little longer. In the view of reality, which is eternity, in old age, how much longer can you prolong your life? A few months, a couple of years. And after those couple months or years pass and the inevitable comes before you, it's not that you're going to necessarily welcome death any more than you did a few months before. The same suffering, the same misery is just postponed slightly. So the greatest danger in life is to forget Krishna at the time of death. So here, King Puranjan, due to a life of taking shelter of his attachments to the misconceptions of I am this body and what is in relation to the body is mine, he naturally, it is described, being, because he was overly attracted to his wife, he was already quite poverty-stricken. Now, this poverty-stricken can be understood in different ways. Oftentimes, due to attachment to family members, one's poverty-stricken because he spends all his money and hard-earned wealth to somehow or other fulfill their desires. But on a more relevant level, one's spiritual assets. We're wealthy in this world according to wise investments. Yes? If you invest your money in property, if you invest your money in some proper bank balance, then you're considered wealthy. But if you don't use your investments properly, then you become poverty-stricken. Now, what is our greatest wealth? It has already been explained so many times. The time we have in this human life is our greatest wealth. Human life is so rare. Durlabha manava janma lobhya samsare. So rare is this human life. We take it for granted. But actually, if you were to be able to remember all your previous millions of births and all you went through the various plant species and fish species and all your different insect species lives, and then you were able to remember all the different traumas you went through in your reptile lives. Not just Wenny, but so many different reptiles. Lizards and snakes, and mosquitoes and ants, bees. And all your traumas in your bird lives. And then through various millions of species of animals. Then you'd actually really appreciate how fortunate I am to be a human being. When I was an ant, human beings were crushing me. I was always running away from being stepped upon by their feet, but now I'm a human. When I was an animal, humans were slaughtering me and eating me, but now I'm a human. From every point of view, human life is a great fortune. And of all the times I've been suffered birth, millions and millions of births, you see, when a child comes out of the womb, it's not smiling and laughing. It's crying, yes? It's a painful ordeal for the mother. It's a painful ordeal for the child. And the father, it's a painful ordeal. He's usually worrying like anything. It's a very painful birth for everybody around. Except the brahmacharis. They just, haribo, haribo. But birth is difficult. Millions and millions of times you were just crushed up in a little egg trying to get out, or pushed out of some womb. It's very difficult. Can you imagine living in an egg? And you're already fully developed, and you're trying to get out. You're totally bewildered, and all your limbs don't work properly. They're paining you. It's a very difficult birth. In old age, yes, we see old human beings, but you don't think animals and birds and insects and all species, they don't suffer the pains of old age? At least as much as a human. We have seen old donkeys and old cows every species of life. Old age is very, very painful. And then death. Factually, whatever species of life you're in, you become very much attached to your body because it's the only means of enjoyment that you know of. The little insect will fight for its life like anything. Because that body, the insect, knows nothing but enjoyment. At least a human being can cultivate something higher, some philosophy of life that can give solace at the time of death. But the lower species, they have no logic or philosophy. They're simply addicted to the bodily conception only. So can you imagine what a horrible, fearful, miserable situation death is to the lower species? And we've been through it millions and millions and millions of times, and now we come to this human life, which is the opportunity to once and for all solve the problem and understand what real spiritual happiness is. It's so rare. So priceless. And human beings do not really live very long, especially in this age of Kali. Padam padam yad vipadam natesham. In human life, in this Kali Yuga especially, disaster and death can come upon us at any moment. Unexpectedly, individually, collectively. Automobile accidents, airplane crashes, terrorist activities, just domestic accidents. It happens every day. You could just be taking a bath and one little wire falls and you get electrocuted. Very well. We have read. Somebody's listening to the radio, taking shower, and the radio falls, and the person's electrocuted. Wasn't expecting it. And in the age of Kali, these diseases, we don't even know what's happening in our body. We're thinking I'm healthy and happy and wise. But there might be little enemies in the form of disease, just developing their forces, and you don't even know it. Even the doctors can't see it till it's too late. Yes, we do not know. Prahlad Maharaj told his students, you're 5 years old, don't waste time. Do not be under the illusion that you will become an old man. You can die tomorrow. And this was in Satya Yuga, when things were more regulated. So yes, every moment is so precious. And the span of life is so short. 70, 80, maybe 90 years. What is the average life expectancy rate in India? It's not much. And that time passes so fast. When you get in your 50s, you look back, where has my life gone? Like a flash. And when you're 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, it doesn't seem like I've lived a long life. Passes so quickly. And time, the power of God within this world, you cannot stop it. You cannot even delay it for a moment, ever. It just keeps moving on. When you look at the second hand of a clock, every second your life is being consumed. You're coming closer to death. And you could unplug the clock or take the batteries out and think the second hand is now staying where it is. But that is illusion. The seconds are passing. If we were really to meditate, contemplate, and ponder the concept of time, it's incredible. What type of inconceivable energy Krishna has manifested through time. In Virat Rup, Krishna told Arjuna, "Time I am." What a power. What a power. You can't see it. You can't touch it. You can't taste it. You can't feel it. You can't even conceive of it. It's so subtle, yet it's so powerful. It's acting on the grossest platform of destroying Himalayan mountains, drying up oceans. Physically killing the gross bodies of the kings and the paupers without discrimination. Time is literally annihilating everything and everyone. But you can't see it, touch it, smell it, taste it, hear it. Can't even conceive of it. So subtle. And it never stops. That's amazing, isn't it? It never stops working. Such continuity. The seconds, minutes, hours, days, weeks, fortnights, months, years, decades, centuries, millenniums, yugas. Just steady, constant, and all-pervading also. It's not that it's working somewhere and not somewhere else. It's all-pervading in its influence in every particle of material creation. And it's doing the most devastating, complete, destructive work to all embodied matter on the grossest level. But yet, it's so imperceptible, so subtle. Practically all material conception of life is resting on it. Our happiness, our distress, our aspirations, our lamentations, our pride and our guilt. It's all floating upon the oceanic existence of past, present, and future time. Factually, all of our conceptions in life are under the influence of time. All of our thoughts, our impressions of the past, our observations of the present, our aspirations or fears of the future. Isn't that what all our thoughts are about? Isn't that what our entire life is about? We are factually, in every sense, within the field of relativity, we are being controlled and influenced by time. I did this. It's time. I will do that. I am doing this. It's all resting upon the power of time. So yes, every moment is so precious. Krishna says, "Time I am." He's all-pervading, influencing every aspect of your life within and without. Yes? So to reciprocate with Krishna, just like Krishna gives us food, so we offer it to Krishna. That is a reciprocation of love. Krishna gives us senses, so we utilize our senses to serve Him, to please Him, to glorify Him. That is reciprocation of love. Krishna gives us wealth, we use it for His service, for the welfare of others. That is reciprocation. So Krishna gives us time. He gives us the present moment. He gives us the remembrance of the past, and He gives us the opportunities in the future. And He is that time. So how to reciprocate? By utilizing every moment for its proper purpose. Therefore, Krishna explains, as Lord Kapila gave to Devahuti, that all the injunctions of all the Vedas are all there to assist and support the two most important of all rules. To always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. Now these two words, always and never, refer to time, do they not? To always remember Krishna means at every moment. To never forget Krishna means at every moment. So to reciprocate with Krishna by utilizing this all-pervading, all-powerful, subtle energy that's controlling all universal creation time, we always try to remember Krishna and we never, never, ever forget Krishna. Thus, the greatest danger is to forget Krishna. And the greatest benediction is to remember Krishna. You can gain great empires, but it will all be by the power of the subtle energy of time. It is in the process of being taken away from you at this moment. Actually, while you're developing something, you don't see it. It's being taken away from you before you even have it. It's very mysterious. Just like this construction is going on. So much construction in Mumbai. Big, big buildings and bridges and roads and airports. While they're working so hard, factually, by the power of time, just the conception and the planning of it before the physical structure even begins, it's already being destroyed by time. Arivo, does that make sense? Actually, it doesn't, but it's a reality. Because the mystery of the inconceivable nature of time is unfathomable. We think we can hold the truth within our fist and say, yes, I know. You can speak words and show other people, yes, I know. And you can have some idea. But it's achintya. Krishna is achintya. And the way He conducts material nature is also achintya. It is inconceivable. If we just get the basic idea of how it works, then we can make the proper efforts with the proper direction and blessings to do the right thing. But how inconceivable and mysterious is the action of time. All creation, maintenance, and destruction is actually all going on simultaneously on the subtle level for everything. And therefore, a person with wisdom does not really take the relative manifestations of material nature very seriously. Nashato vijate bhavo na bhavo vijate shava. A person understands what's really relevant is what is permanent, what is eternal, what is beyond the realm of time. And what is that? The soul, the Atma. and its relationship with the Supreme Soul or Krishna. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught to Sri Sanatana Goswami, the three eternal principles that must be understood to achieve the ultimate goal of life. And what are they? There is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is His devotee, and there is the process of devotion. There is Ishvara, there is Bhakti, and there is Bhakta. That's all. This is the eternal reality that is also all-pervading. Krishna is the supreme eternal truth. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yovidadati kaman. There is one supreme eternal beyond time. If you're beyond time, what does that mean? That means you're no longer under the influence of prakriti, material nature. You're no longer under the influence of karma, the imperceptible law of action and reaction. So Krishna is the supreme eternal, from whom everything emanates. And the living entities are all eternal parts and parcels of Krishna, always subordinate to Krishna, eternally subordinate to Krishna. In forgetfulness of our loving sentiments toward Krishna, we are subordinate to Krishna through the power of time in this material existence, and all the modes of material nature that control us. But in the liberated state, we are supported to Krishna in that we are His eternal servants. Jivera Swarupoi Krishna Nitya Das. So there, the eternal nature of the soul is that we are bhaktas, and Krishna is the ultimate object of our love. And what is the connection between the eternal object of love and the eternal lovers? Love. That is bhakti. Bhakti is the eternal connection between the infinitesimal, infinite living entities and the supreme one God of all gods, the all-attractive Krishna. So devotees are not concerned with liberation. They're not concerned with mystic powers. They're not concerned with material acquisition. Because they know that for the soul, all these things are really quite irrelevant and superficial. There is only one eternal principle that connects us to God, and that is bhakti, devotion. It's within the realm of bhakti that all rasa, all happiness, that our eternal reality can be expressed and realized. Therefore, Krishna tells in Sri Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktya mama bijanati yavan yashtasmi tatvata. It is only by bhakti that I can be understood as I am. There is no other way. Because bhakti is the eternal energy of the soul which connects us to Krishna. And what is the power of bhakti? It is so inconceivable. It is really achintya. Because although we are eternally infinitesimal, tiny little sparks, from one level of vision, the spirit soul is like a sun ray, and Krishna is like the sun planet. Now the sun planet, as we know it, this sun planet in the world, is millions and millions, tens and millions of miles around, is it not? And what is a sun ray? a sun ray is so small, it's too small to even measure with a measuring instrument. Yes? It's minute, a sun ray. How could the sun planet come under the control and be subordinate to the sun ray? Is that scientifically reasonable, feasible, or possible? But by the power of bhakti, Krishna becomes conquered and controlled by the love, by the bhakti of his devotee. So wonderful. Krishna's losing wrestling matches with his devotees. And just to show the world that he's the loser, he carries the victor, his cowherd boys, on his shoulders. He becomes their Vimana. Yes? He becomes their Garuda. I am subordinate. He has won. And Satyabhama, by her love, she tells Krishna, you gave Rukmini a Parijata flower? Well, I want a Parijata tree. Haribo. So Prabhupada and the Acharyas explain that Satyabhama's request made Krishna like a henpecked husband. Do you know this word in India, henpecked? I don't really understand it so much because I've never been in that situation. But I guess roosters are male chickens and hens are female chickens. I guess roosters get pecked means you go. I guess hens peck roosters or something like that. And then the roosters just do everything for the... Actually, when the rooster's waking you up in the morning going, ah, 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 he's actually trying to attract the attention of the hens. Very well. Because he's controlled. So Krishna was like that. Controlled by the demand of Satyabhama. And it wasn't an easy thing. Of course, for Krishna, everything is easy. But still, his pastime makes everything very interesting. Indra told, you cannot take my Parijata tree. And Krishna said, well, I'm taking. Satyabhama wants. So Indra declared war against Krishna over a tree. You remember that story? He actually created a war. He assembled all the demigods to attack Krishna because he took his tree. He has so much wealth, he has Nandana gardens, and he has so much palaces and apsaras and Gandharvas singing for him, but so attached to one tree. Haribo. And Krishna fought a whole war just so that Satyabhama could have her Parijata tree. Krishna's conquered by love. Yashoda Mai bound Krishna by the rope of her love. He was defeated. So bhakti is the energy. The energy which connects the soul to its supreme source. And why is bhakti so all-powerful that it can even conquer God himself? Because bhakti is the nature of the supreme source of all bhakti, is Krishna's own Ladini Shakti, his pleasure potency, Srimati Radharani. She is Madan Mohan Mohini. Krishna can effortlessly conquer Cupid, who conquers everyone within material creation. But Radhika conquers Krishna by her love. And because all bhakti is part and parcel of her love, that is why it is so powerful. Therefore, bhakti amamami jananti. It is only by bhakti that I can be understood as I am. It is only by bhakti that you can enter into my abode. Because that is the eternal energy of spiritual reality. So to utilize the precious moments we have during this short and uncertain time we have as human beings to cultivate bhakti is real intelligence. That is real wealth. Because the soul, the supreme soul, and our relation with the supreme soul, which is bhakti, are eternal, indestructible. Neha vikramanasosti pratyavayo nivetyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. That in this endeavor, Krishna explains, on the path of devotional service, there is never a loss. There is no diminution. Because it's within the realm of eternal reality. Any progress you make, any investment you make in your account of bhakti can never be taken away. There is no power that can steal it from you. Even in Bible, Jesus has said, make your treasure the kingdom of God. What does it mean, make your treasure the kingdom of God? People invest in their treasury. Yes? If you have a treasury, you invest in it. Make your treasure the kingdom of God. Because in not this world, not anything or anyone of this world. Because if you make your treasure in this world, your treasure will be stolen by thieves, withered by wind, corroded by rust. It's inevitable. Whatever you invest your human energy into in this world, it will be taken away from you. That is 100% absolutely certain. But if you make your treasure the kingdom of God, whatever you invest there is eternal, is beyond the realm of relativity. Anything for you do for Krishna, Krishna will never forget. Anything you do in this world will be forgotten. Yes? You may do something nice for someone, but then if you make a mistake, do they care what you've done before? People easily forget what you do. And when they die, nobody... Death is certain. But Krishna will never forget any one time a devotee chants his name sincerely. Any one time a devotee gives something for his service. Never forgets. If you become 1% Krishna conscious, you can never lose it. Due to offenses, you can forget it's there. If you're 80% Krishna conscious, and then by previous conditionings, we foolishly become negligent in our sadhana, we become a little lazy, we become distracted by artha, kama, dhamma, moksha things. We become distracted toward sense objects, toward relative responsibilities, or due to the ego, we make aparads. Inattentiveness, we become proud, we make aparads. Then what happens? We fall down. And what is fall down? It doesn't mean you lose anything. It means whatever you've invested and whatever's there in your treasury becomes covered. You can't see it, you can't understand it, and you actually have no access to it. That's a very difficult situation. If you have crores of rupees in bank account and you're laying in the street suffering and you have no access to that money, although it's yours, that's a difficult situation. That's what happens when a devotee falls down. His mind and senses become overwhelmed by lust and envy and anger and pride and greed and illusion. We become subjected and inflicted by material qualities and material aspirations. And we're either enjoying like anything, or we're being kicked and pounded by material nature. Where is all that love? Where is all that devotion? Where is all that detachment? Where is all that wisdom that I've cultivated for so long? I need it. But you have no access to it. You don't know where to find it. It's all there, but it's of no immediate value to you because you can't use it due to offenses, due to negligence. But it's waiting. And whenever we learn our good lesson and turn back to Krishna with sincerity and honesty, when we turn back to Guru, Krishna, and Vaishnavas, I'm sorry, I regret what I've done. I want to serve. Then Krishna, according to what we need, he will either give access to all that spiritual wealth that we have invested, that we have accumulated, or he may just give little at a time. He may just reveal little at a time, because he gives everything at once. You may not have learned your lesson thoroughly, and you'll be back in the same situation tomorrow. So Krishna knows what's best for us. But he declares in Gita that anything you do on the path of bhakti is never, ever, ever lost. Why? Because that imperceptible, subtle, all-pervading power of time, which is controlling everything that exists, material creation, both subtle and gross. Bhakti is transcendental. Bhakti is Radharani's energy. Bhakti is Krishna's pleasure potency. And the soul is empowered with that bhakti. What greater welfare is there than that? Any advancement we make in devotional service is the ultimate wealth we can possibly attain, because it's a wealth that can bring true happiness to your heart of hearts. It is a wealth that, when shared with others, can bring about the greatest welfare, the greatest gift. And it is everlasting. Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Pavitramitam Uttamam. Krishna explains that this knowledge is the king of knowledge. It's the most confidential of all secrets, because it brings everlasting happiness and peace. So the time we have within this world is so precious, so valuable. In this world of uncertainties, in this world of inevitable death, a wise person invests the time and all their God-given human energies in what is truth. What is truth is eternal. What is temporary is illusion. It is illusory. The only truth is that which is eternal. That is what the great sages have taught us. And that is what Krishna tells in Gita. Nashato vidyate bhavo nabhavo vidyatush. What is real is eternal. What is unreal is temporary. The reality is jivera swarupoi krishnara nityadas, that we are eternally the servants of Krishna. Puranjan, perhaps he knew all these things, but he did not make them prominent in his life. As many people understand Gita intellectually, but unless we make the teaching prominent in our life, stop making excuses. Stop blaming others. Whatever is coming upon us is our own karma. Just try to adjust your consciousness rather than always trying to adjust material nature. It's hopeless. Surrender to Krishna. Take shelter of Krishna. Tatenu kampamsu samikshamano. With grateful heart, Krishna, I deserve worse. I'm yours. Then we have access to the eternal wealth of the spiritual world. To such a person, liberation is rightful claim, no one else. So Maya, very clever, always giving us so many excuses and reasons and justifications to not surrender, to not take shelter, because we become so much incredibly entangled with the network of the karmic events that are taking place in this world that we lose scope of what we really need, of who we really are, and where our real shelter is. We're constantly turning our backs to the rare diamond of the opportunity to take shelter in humility of God. And we're turning our face to the broken pieces of glass of all of our material adjustments to try to protect our image or protect our status quo within this world. It's useless. You can't do it. No matter how hard you try, you're going to lose the battle. That is the power of time. Time always wins. Everyone loses. Save and accept those who, within the spirit of being more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, offering all respect to others and expecting none in return, actually take sincere shelter of the chanting of Krishna's holy name. If we remember Krishna at the time of death, Krishna assures us without any doubt we will attain him without fail. And that same Krishna who spoke these priceless gifts of wisdom in Bhagavad Gita has descended as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to practically teach us how to remember Krishna in life and at death. By following the principles of Guru Sadhu Shastra, and in the association, cultivating the sentiments of the servant of the servant of the servant, and pleasing Krishna in such a way that he is happy in the way we are remembering him. Sahajiyas remember Krishna, but Krishna's not happy in the way that they're remembering him. This is a subtle point. It's not that we simply want to remember Krishna. That's fundamental, basic, to always remember Krishna. But we want to remember Krishna in such a way that he's pleased with us. Yes, sam siddhir haritoshanam. Kamsa was always remembering Krishna. Much more than you and me. Perhaps, at least more than me. He was dreaming of Krishna all night, every night. How many of you are dreaming of Krishna all night, every night? And all day, he was just seeing Krishna everywhere, in hatred and fear and disdain. And Shishupal was same. Shishupal Kamsa, they were constantly thinking of Krishna. but they weren't pleasing Krishna. Therefore, they got liberation, but they didn't get entrance into the rasas of the spiritual world. They didn't get bhakti. They got mukti. Therefore, our great acharyas tell that what the impersonalists think is so great, mukti, is what Krishna gives the demons, like Kamsa and Shishupal. So yes, they were remembering Krishna, but they weren't pleasing Krishna. So we don't want to just barge into Krishna's abode. Krishna, I want this rasa, I want this position. Gopi Bhartur Padakamalayora Das 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 Anudas. If you really want entrance into being the servant of the servant of the servant of gopis, it's the highest realm of the spiritual world, is the Leela of Krishna and gopis. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, be servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord of gopis. Remember Krishna in a spirit of how to please him, how to serve him. Thus, Trinarapi Suniche Natharor Ivasahishnana Amanina Manadina Kirtaniya Sadahari. This pleases Krishna. When we're humble, when we're respectful, when we're tolerant. And then Krishna, who is non-different than his holy names, feels very, very happy and satisfied to be dancing on our tongues, to be manifesting within our hearts as we call out his holy name. Respecting Krishna's all-pervading, inconceivable existence of time, we should end class here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I thank you very much.